This is Free Speech Radio News for Thursday, June 24th, 2010. In Oaxaca, Mexico, I'm Shannon Young. Coming up on today's newscast, a decision to build a new tourist center in Jerusalem sparks controversy. The Supreme Court rules on campaign disclosure as Congress takes up transparency. And a prominent Mexican activist comes out of hiding to request political asylum. Those stories and more, but first, this news.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Floodwaters in northeastern Brazil have subsided, but in their wake, more than 40 dead, at least 600 missing, and thousands of people displaced. Photos of the ravaged towns show purple-brown silt mixed with debris covering the streets, twisted railroad tracks, overturned vehicles, and razed buildings. Estimates of the number left homeless by the floods range between 100 and 400,000. The flooding began last week, but persistent rain has kept the risk high in the largely impoverished states of Alagoas and Pernambuco. In a rapid series of political maneuvers, Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd has stepped down, and rising unopposed to fill his place, Julia Gillard, the country's first female prime minister. For FSRN, Jesse Boylan reports from Australia.
Over the past months, voters had lost faith in Prime Minister Rudd after he made a series of unpopular decisions, including shelving an emissions trading scheme and his harsh policies towards asylum seekers. As the Labor Party's confidence in the PM drooped even further, Julia Gillard agreed to make a bid for the leadership. Political analysts say Gillard is a self-confident and highly competent politician. Born in a Welsh town in the United Kingdom before migrating to Australia at a young age, Gillard was first elected to Parliament in 1998. She has been scrutinised for her private life, being childless, unmarried, and an atheist. Although Gillard is from the left faction of the Labor Party, it is unlikely there will be any radical shifts in public policy because she is already a key member of Kevin Rudd's cabinet. Rudd has now fallen to the history books as Australia's shortest-serving Prime Minister in almost four decades. Jesse Boylan, FSRN Australia.
Last week, FSRN reported that an Indian government panel was meeting to review an unpopular court settlement on the Bhopal gas disaster. But the panel's recommendations have also proven unpopular. Hundreds of survivors rallied in New Delhi today, saying the government is not going far enough to compensate the victims and families of the 1984 gas leak. Bismillah Gilani reports from India.
More than 500 survivors marched in New Delhi to protest a government panel's report on the Bhopal disaster. The panel submitted their work earlier this week, recommending, among other things, increased compensation for the victims of the tragedy. But the protesters say the panel recommendations benefit only a handful of the victims. Satinath Sarangi is member of the Bhopal Group of Information and Action.
What has happened is a very faulty assessment has been done, which says that 42% people who are directly exposed to indium carbide gases have not suffered any injury at all. Okay. And 52% have suffered only temporary injuries. So according to this categorization, only 6% have suffered permanent injuries. Whereas the fact is there are hundreds of thousands of people who have been battling exposure-related disease and still today have those problems. So they have been all left out.
Members of the government cabinet are meeting to consider the recommendations. They are expected to announce a decision Friday. Until then, the protesters say they will camp near the parliament building. The Bhopal gas leak is widely considered the world's most devastating industrial accident. Thousands died in the tragedy. Bismillah Gilani, Free Speech Radio News, New Delhi.
A dispute resolution court in Kenya has ruled that the country's prisoners have the right to vote in an upcoming constitutional referendum. This is the first time Kenya has recognized the voting rights of inmates. FSRN's Abdulkarim Jamale reports from Nairobi.
On August 4th, Kenyan voters will decide whether to replace their constitution with a version that decreases the power of the president. And now the number of citizens eligible to vote has increased by about 53,000. A Kenya court ruled Wednesday that the prisoners over the age of 18 and mentally able to vote will be able to cast ballots. The court ordered the Electoral Commission to register the prisoners to vote within 21 days and make plans to turn each prison into a polling station. The commission argued this may cause a delay in voting. but in reading the judgment, Justice Samuel Mukunya dismissed the Electoral Commission's warning.
We do not think that the registration of 53,000 inmates or less in 90 institutions, in nearly all in urban centers, can pose such a challenge that can send the electoral process into a fatal spin.
The court ruling applies only on 14 in August's referendum. Abdul Karim Jimale, FSRN, Nairobi.
The U.S. Federal Aviation Administration has approved the use of an unmanned drone to patrol the U.S.-Mexico border in Texas. The aircraft has already been put to use in Arizona. The Department of Homeland Security announced the decision yesterday, but the Brownsville Herald reported earlier this month that drone flights in Texas began on June 1st. The Herald also reported that the first drone mission suffered from a communication loss that, quote, resulted in pilot deviation. Customs and Border Patrol has ordered a temporary halt in missions until further pilot training can occur. And finally, people with disabilities in the San Francisco Bay Area are camping out this week to protest proposed cuts to senior and disability services. About a dozen protesters have pitched tents in a median in Berkeley, and nearly 100 more have been joining the core group during the day. The state is considering reducing funding once again to California's in-home supportive services, Medi-Cal, and other programs that serve at-risk populations. Organizers say every year the state chips away at social services funding.
I'm living in San Francisco on a fixed income. Last year I got $100 cut out of my salary, and after I finished paying PG&E, my rent, I got $200 a month to spend on food.
Bruce Allison is one of the full-time protesters at the Arnaville campout who would be affected if the cuts go through.
Affect me a lot. I may have to move out of the state, city that I was born in, San Francisco, find a cheaper place to live.
Allison says he will be camping out until the end of the week. Protesters argue innovative programs like in-home supportive services are working and help maintain a high quality of life and independence for seniors and people with disabilities in California. And that's headlines for Free Speech Radio News. From Eugene, Oregon, I'm Jess Burns.
This is Shannon Young in for Dorian Marina. The Supreme Court handed down a number of rulings this week as it nears the end of its session. One case, Doe versus Reed, addresses the withholding of information during political campaigns. In a nearly unanimous decision, the Supreme Court upheld disclosure. As FSRN's Leanne Caldwell reports, the decision comes on the same day Congress voted on a bill to expand transparency during elections.
In Washington state, the legislature approved a bill that falls just short of same-sex marriage. It gives same-sex couples the same legal benefits as opposite-sex married couples. Anti-gay advocates tried to undo it. Project Marriage Washington successfully collected enough signatures to add Referendum 71 to the ballot to repeal the same-sex rights. The Washington Secretary of State sued because Project Marriage refused to disclose the petition and its signatures. Project Marriage said they feared violent retaliation. The issue before the Supreme Court was whether disclosure of information violated the First Amendment. Project Marriage said the information should be kept private so not to discourage participation. Ken Klukowski is with the Families Research Council. His organization filed a brief in support of Project Marriage.
We want to support those voters who wanted to express their support for traditional marriage.
More than a dozen conservative legal and social organizations signed on in support. Washington Secretary of State Sam Reed said Project Marriage violated Washington State's law of public disclosure. He had the support of cities and states across the country. He also had the support of gay rights advocates. John Davidson is the legal director at Lambda Legal, a gay rights organization. He says transparency is crucial.
It's important that members of the public be able to get copies of the petitions to ensure that the measures validly qualified before they're placed on the ballot.
The court agreed. In an 8-1 decision, the court sided with Washington State. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote the opinion. He said disclosure helps to, quote, root out fraud. The case was decided narrowly. The court said that if a signatory can show proof of violent threat or harm, then the petitions can be kept secret. But this ruling could have broader and immediate implications. Congress is attempting to pass a measure called the Disclose Act. It was written after the Supreme Court decided the case Citizens United and said corporations have the First Amendment right to campaign for or against a political candidate. Congress's Disclose Act would mandate that corporations disclose their affiliation and donors if they are running campaign ads. Republicans say it's unconstitutional. Representative Dan Lundgren of California on the floor of the House of Representatives Thursday. He says it violates the First Amendment.
But I am not sure that I have ever seen a frontal assault on the Constitution as this bill is. Why do I say that? I say that because this deals with the First Amendment. It deals with political speech.
But some legal experts say today's Supreme Court case, Doe v. Reed, could discredit these attempts to label the Disclose Act unconstitutional. Nate Pursley is a professor of law at Columbia Law School.
If what you're really trying to do is provide transparency and ensure that everyone knows who's spending money and who's signing on to a particular candidate's campaign, then this decision is supportive of that sort of theory of the First Amendment.
Democrats also say the Supreme Court decision dismisses Republican arguments that it violates the First Amendment. They hope to pass the Disclose Act before the November elections. Leanne Caldwell, FSRN, Washington, D.C.
As FSRN recently reported, New York State is poised to put into law a landmark set of protections for housekeepers, nannies, and other domestic workers, workers who are not covered under federal regulations. On the international level, some UN member countries are also working on the issue and could ratify a convention creating international labor standards for domestic work. UN Radio's Patrick Maigua reports from Geneva. Oil spill workers have reinstalled the containment cap that malfunctioned yesterday, but the mechanism is only catching a portion of the oil spewing into the ocean. The country's worst environmental disaster is unfolding as activists and organizers are gathered in Detroit this week for the U.S. Social Forum. Among them is Deborah Sweet, a member of the Emergency Committee to Stop the Gulf Oil Disaster, an ad hoc group of national activists and local residents. She joins me via cell phone from the U.S. Social Forum. First, how did the Emergency Committee to Stop the Gulf Oil Disaster form, and who are its members?
There's a variety of activists that came together very quickly. 2 weeks ago, not even, we coalesced the idea of holding an emergency summit in the Gulf. This was on the basis of working and communication between people in the Gulf and also political activists around the country who have been very concerned about what's happening with this oil spill.
The group has developed a list of seven demands for Gulf recovery. What are they?
The demands start with stop oil drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. And we want full compensation, retraining, and new employment for all affected. Secondly, and this is really important, we want an immediate end to the use of dispersants. Nobody knows really what the ultimate or even immediate effects of these dispersants are. But what we hear from wildlife biologists and people who understand some of the science of this is that the dispersants may be more dangerous to wildlife than the animals. And, of course, we don't know what the effect on human health is either of the dispersants. And then there's a series of demands that, you know, call on the government and the entire oil industry to use all necessary resources to stop and clean up the blowout gusher, prevent oil from hitting the shore, protect wildlife, treat injured wildlife, and repair all devastation. We want no punishment from people taking initiative independent of BP and the government to protect the environment and public health, no gag orders on people hired, contracted, or who volunteer, and those responsible for this crime against the environment and the people should be prosecuted.
You were currently at the U.S. Social Forum. What has been the nature of the activity there regarding the Gulf oil disaster?
Well, I have to say very honestly, not much and not enough. There are many environmental workshops, probably 100 of them, and there are many people here concerned in general about the environment and wanting to act, but there's been no, to the degree that's necessary anyway, no mobilization of all the national wildlife and environmental groups around this issue. And I believe that's largely because people are waiting, as they are around the war, to give BP and give Obama the benefit of the doubt, you know, to let them continue to work what they've been doing and solve this. And this is really, really, really the wrong way to go. We need action up from the bottom. We need people organized to, take responsibility for them, for ourselves. And part of what we're trying to do is call people down. The emergency committee is organizing housing in New Orleans now. Call people to come down and be part of taking tours of the crime scenes. You know, we'd love to have a flotilla of boats, of scientists going out to investigate. We want to bring together scientists and people suffering in the area to talk about what's the remediation of this? What are the causes? Where did it come from? We'd like a big conference of scientists and ads being published where that determine and put forward very strongly the necessity for independent political action being the only thing that can break this logjam and force the government and BP to take action. So we're just beginning a workshop right here that we called on a last-minute basis at the Social Forum, and we're making a strategy plan right now to bring many more people to get a live report back from the Gulf tomorrow here at the Social Forum, where we're going to be bringing the testimony of people from the Gulf and these political demands and making a plan for people to leave from the Social Forum to go right down to New Orleans.
Thanks for joining us today on FSRN.
Thanks, Shannon.
Deborah Sweet is a member of the Emergency Committee to Stop the Gulf Oil Disaster. She spoke to us today from the U.S. Social Forum. With the spread of online media, finding out what happened today is only a click away. But finding media that can provide understanding and perspective about the news is far more rare. Since 2000, Free Speech Radio News has aired on-the-ground reports from all over the U.S. and the world. And we have connected the dots to show the global connections in the news. Whether we're explaining policy maneuvering in Washington or army maneuvering in Pakistan, FSRN makes the connections that help you be a citizen of the world. Your support of FSRN goes a long way to help keep this in-depth news coverage coming. Visit FSRN.org to find out how you can help. I'm Shannon Young, and you are listening to Free Speech Radio News. Stay with us. Philadelphia jury ruled in favor of the Boy Scouts yesterday, deciding that the city cannot kick the Boy Scouts out of their Philadelphia headquarters. Attorneys representing the city argued that the Boy Scouts don't ask, don't tell policy on gay members violated the city's anti-discrimination laws. From Federal Civil Court in Philadelphia, FSRN's Matthew Petrillo reports.
A U.S. Supreme Court decision in 2000 permits the Boy Scouts to exclude openly gay members because the Boy Scouts are considered a private organization. But the national group's exclusionary practices violates Philadelphia's anti-discrimination policy, so the city attempted to evict or get fair market rent from the Boy Scouts for its headquarters on city-owned land. On Wednesday, a jury disagreed with the city's actions and ruled in favor of the Cradle Liberty Council, the local chapter of the Boy Scouts. The council argued the city was violating its First Amendment rights. The group also said it doesn't directly practice the policies of the Boy Scouts of America, America, but it can't legally sign a non-discrimination policy because it would contradict the national organization's regulations. Bill McSwain represents the Boy Scouts.
Sexuality is not really part of the conversation. The Cradle of Liberty doesn't particularly care if someone is heterosexual, homosexual, whatever. That's sort of a personal thing.
But one of the city's witnesses, openly gay Greg Laterra, testified he was expelled from the Cradle of Liberty Council when he was 18 and months away from becoming an Eagle Scout.
We're taught, you know, the code, the oath, and trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous. We're supposed to do these things to others. But yet the organization now says, well, if you're gay, you can't play.
The scouts say it was because he violated the use of his uniform. Outside City Hall Wednesday, city spokesperson Doug Oliver said they're shocked by the jury's decision.
We're disappointed that the jury didn't appreciate the city's obligation to kind of deploy municipal resources in a way that respects the rights of all Philadelphians, not just one group over another.
Although the scouts' attorney said they're seeking a permanent injunction, Oliver says he will see them in court again.
The city is still the landlord. Only thing that it said was that if the city is going to evict the Boy Scouts, it can't do so on the basis of their policy, and it would have to be for some other reasons.
The judge, Ronald Buckwalter, who was a former Boy Scout himself, noted the city cannot evict them due to the city's varying viewpoints with the Scouts, but rather has to find a legally compelling reason. Matthew Petrillo, FSRN, Philadelphia.
A prominent Mexican activist has emerged from more than 4 years in hiding to seek asylum. America del Valle arrived at the Venezuelan embassy in Mexico City Wednesday to ask the South American nation to take her in as a political refugee. Del Valle, along with other members of her family, gained national recognition for leading a fight against land expropriation for the construction of an international airport in the town of San Salvador Atenco. The battle played out in both the streets and in the courts and became a symbolic victory for the power of popular organization in Mexico. But in May of 2006, federal, state, and local police cracked down on the town and its land defense activists, arresting more than 200 people and killing two others. America del Valle was the only leader of Atenco's land defense movement to evade capture and has been living underground ever since, facing the same kidnapping charges that resulted in a 112-year prison sentence for her father, Ignacio del Valle. While she has not made any public appearance, America del Valle has periodically sent letters and audio recordings like this one, recently played at a rally to demand a favorable Supreme Court ruling for the 12 Atenco activists who remain in prison.
The freedom for Atenco and all social movements and fighters is in a decisive moment. Finally, after 4 years on a torturous judicial path, the case of our 12 brothers is before the Supreme Court, who can rule on their upcoming release. And what comes out of this case will affect other political prisoners and other social fighters also accused of kidnapping for being in the crosshairs of the oppressors.
America del Valle's mother, Trinidad Ramirez, went to see her daughter yesterday in the Venezuelan embassy and described the experience in this morning's edition of the Mexican newscast Hoy por Hoy.
She told me she was no longer willing to continue living in the situation she's been living in for more than 4 years, in hiding with the uncertainty of knowing that she could be detained at any moment. And she told me, "I've made this decision, Mama, and the only thing I'm asking right now," and she said this with tears in her eyes, "is that you support me and that you support this decision, because otherwise I won't feel good about it." And as she went on to explain her situation to me, and of course, I support my daughter. And while I was finally able to hug her, and I was so happy in that moment, we were able to cry together and to speak a little about the many things that we haven't been able to say to each other in more than 4 years.
In a letter released yesterday, America del Valle said that while she's leaving, she's not giving up. She also thanked the people who protected and hid her over the years, saying, quote, "I don't have anything to pay you with except my struggle and my strength." The government of Venezuela is expected to need some time to decide on her petition for asylum. Meanwhile, Mexico's Supreme Court is due to issue a ruling on the fate of the 12 Atenco prisoners by the end of the month.
We'll be right back.
The mayor of Jerusalem this week approved a plan to demolish 22 Palestinian homes in a neighborhood near the Old City to make way for a tourist center. Part of the plan would also legalize dozens of buildings constructed without Israeli permission. FSRN's Ghassan Banura has the story.
In the year 985, the Arab traveler Al-Maqdisi wrote about a village called Silwan, perched on the side of a lush valley with streams and gardens and adjacent to the old city of Jerusalem. Other historians refer to it as a staging area for Jewish pilgrims during the holy festival of Passover. Today, Silwan has grown into an urban neighborhood in East Jerusalem with 50,000 residents. While several hundred Israeli settlers live in Silwan, the vast majority of the residents are Palestinians. Many are refugees from the 1948 war which created Israel. Now some 1,000 people stand to be displaced if Israeli officials moved forward with demolishing 22 homes in the Al-Bustan neighborhood of Silwan. The Jerusalem municipality wants to build an archaeological park and tourist center on the historical site of King David's gardens. The plan needs to pass several more rounds of approval before it will be implemented. Defending the plan, the Israeli Jerusalem municipality says it will help legalize many more Palestinian homes in Al-Bustan. Israel says the homes that would be demolished were built without permits, which are rarely granted to Palestinians. Murad Shafi'i owns a home slated for destruction by Israel.
My father lived here for more than 50 years. I have lived here for 30 years, and my son for 10. In total, it's about 100 years. The homes of Al-Bustan neighborhood existed here since 1918, before the occupation, before Israel was created in Palestine.
Since Israel occupied East Jerusalem in 1967, Israelis have been trying to establish a presence in the neighborhood and push out its Palestinian residents. Israeli settler organizations point to the settlement of Yemenite Jewish community in the valley in the late 1800s as justification for their attempts to move Jews back into the area. The Yemenite community fled during the Arab Revolt in 1936. Ziad Al-Hamouri, the director of the Jerusalem Center for Social and Economic Rights, explains.
What's going on here in East Jerusalem, totally, we are talking not just on Silwan, there is more than 20,000 demolishing orders was published by the Israeli courts, which means that half of the Palestinians in East Jerusalem will be evacuated. If it will be implemented, then this is a very dangerous future which is waiting for the Palestinians in Jerusalem.
Many observers say the ultimate goal of the settlement movement is to undermine Palestinian claim to East Jerusalem so Israel can argue for full control of the city in future peace negotiations. But Al-Bustan community is doing all they can to make sure the demolitions do not occur. They set up a protest tent and hired lawyers to represent them in Israeli courts. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said the demolitions would be illegal, and Israeli Defense Minister Ehud Barak said it lacked common sense. The US State Department expressed concerns, saying the move would undermine peace negotiations. Ghassan Banura, FSRN, Bethlehem.
And that wraps up today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Comp. Headlines editor was Jess Burns. Washington, D.C. editor was Leanne Caldwell. Today's technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley includes Rose Katabchi and Scott Pham. You can visit us online at fsrn.org. You can send comments, questions, or news tips to comments@fsrn.org. Thanks for listening. In Oaxaca, Mexico, I'm Shannon Young.